The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer guest hosting once again for Mr. Stephen Flurry. Mr. Flurry is currently traveling back to our headquarters in Edmond, Oklahoma, but here we're broadcasting from the basement in Edstone, England. As usual, there's a lot of news, as I just listened to myself reading at the top of the hour. It's an unusual experience, but yes, there's a lot of news. I remember a few years ago at this time of year, for those of us in the news bureau, it would sometimes start to get a bit tricky, especially in Europe. The politicians would take a week or two off. Sometimes even the news websites would shut down. To us, the sure sign that things were getting quiet was that Spiegel Online would start publishing stories about Knut the polar bear. And this, I guess it's a much-loved bear in a zoo over there, but every time, without fail, every time there was a quiet news period, and usually that would be for August, and it would be over this weekend in December, they would have an article about Knut the polar bear. But this time it's different, not the least because Knut died a few years back, so he's not around. But today, and this week, Spiegel has no shortage of stories to cover. So I just wanted to mention a few stories is before we launch into our main subject. I was on the Trumpet Hour show on Wednesday talking about the Spanish elections that were held on Sunday, so I thought I'd just give a brief update about that, as I talked about on that show, with all the anger at austerity and just resentment of the traditional parties, as well as accusations of corruption. This election on Sunday produced almost a perfect stalemate. The left parties can't form a coalition. The right parties can't form a coalition. You've got two brand new parties forming a coalition or coming up from nowhere and just threatening the traditional established political order. I'll say the names again just because they're such fun to say. Podemos and Ciudadanos. And it's left a mess. And since I talked about that on Wednesday, the Socialist Party, the main left-wing party, have come out and rejected a coalition offer from the Popular Party, the main right-wing party. So we've now seen that these probably had the best chance of forming a coalition, these two big parties, in the same way that the left and the right-wing have done in Germany. That's not going to happen. So people are talking about weeks or maybe even months now of long coalition negotiations. And this is quite big for Europe. It shows that in country after country, parties that support austerity are wiped out and the entire political system in that country is left in turmoil. And it just happens again and again. And so now, next time you see an economic crisis flare up in Europe, as we know that there will be, as that keeps happening every year, few years or several months or so, it's going to be much harder to deal with. Nations and political parties and governments are going to be much more reluctant to deal with Germany, to submit to austerity measures from Germany, because they know they're going to pay for it come elections. And so this is setting the stage now for potentially some much bigger clashes within Europe, and it could finally force Europe to take the steps that it needs to fix this crisis that has proved so destructive, and that would mean coming together politically, sharing major parts of a common government now, as well as a common currency. So that's an important development in Europe this week. And then, as usual, as we get towards the end of the week, I've been working on putting together the Europe section for our Trumpet Weekly publication. That's a free, about a dozen page news summary that we put together. Always looks very pretty. Our graphics department do a great job of laying that out. You can get that sent to your inbox every week by signing up at thetrumpet.com. I've been working on putting together the Europe section, and one, we'll be talking about that Trumpet Weekly later on today on our Trumpet Hour program. And one article I plan on discussing in more detail then, I'll mention quickly now, is called Germans Stock Up on Weapons for Self-Defense. And it's an article from the Gatestone Institute. At first, I thought the subject sounded far-fetched, but it goes through report after report after report in this article showing that Germans are stocking up on weapons, not just guns, because guns are quite hard to get legally, but things like pepper spray and electrocution weapons, and definitely gun permits are up dramatically. And as I said, it did sound a little far-fetched to read that headline, but this article just goes through so many examples and so much evidence of this. It's very, very compelling. So there's a definite and a dangerous unease growing within Germany right now. And finally, one article I just mentioned at the start. Our German translator, who works over in Edmonton, sent me a very interesting article last night that I thought I'd give a quick mention. And it's called, Is Stoiber Going to Be New Federal President? And Edmund Stoiber is our regular. Readers of the Trumpet magazine will know is a man that we've been watching closely for years. And we talked about him a bit in the December issue of our Trumpet magazine. He was the kind of political disciple of Franz Josef Strauss, who was a very important figure within Germany. And he also played a big role in bringing Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg along and training him in German politics. And this article speculates that the current German president may step down soon and that Stoiber is a prime candidate, if not the prime candidate, to replace him. I don't know how correct this magazine is about this idea, but it's certainly very interesting. I'll refer you back to our December issue if you want to know more about some of these individuals. It's an article called Has Germany's Strongman Finally Arrived? But we'll move now into the main subject I want to talk about on this program, because I want to discuss a few different facets of this. And one of the last times I was on this program, I finished up by talking about an article by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry that he wrote quite a few years ago called America's Achilles Heel. And that article mostly talks about the dangers of cyber warfare, that an enemy could cause great damage to America through hacking its computers and through other information systems. And this was an article written in the late 1990s. And since then, this danger of cyber warfare has been much more talked about. America has even set up a United States Cyber Command. That's the name for their cyber warfare headquarters. And this command is made up of all kinds of very cool-sounding subgroups, like the U.S. Second Army has been designated the U.S. Army Cyber Command, and the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, they all provide units that make up this cyber command. So is this problem solved? Is America taking this vulnerability and this issue of cyber warfare seriously? Well, over the past couple of months, there have been some really disturbing articles that show there is a huge danger here, and that worse than that, America really isn't addressing the danger properly. And that's what I'd like to get into today. Now, I don't think this idea that America is vulnerable to hackers or to cyber attacks, I don't think that is new to anyone. But as we get into some of the facts here, I think you'll be shocked about how vulnerable America is. I was when I was doing this research. I've had this idea for the subject kind of bouncing around for some time. You know, I was kind of thinking, well, people have been talking about the danger of cyber attacks for years and years and years now. Surely they've got at least something sorted out by now. But as I said, I think you'll be shocked at how bad the situation was. I really was surprised, as I said, as I started getting into more detail on this subject. I knew it was bad. It's even worse than I thought it was. But first, let's just make sure we all know what we're talking about. What is cyber warfare? Putting cyber in the front of anything is a good way of making it sound kind of cool and exciting. But basically, it means hacking stuff. You know, in the movies, it normally involves somebody hacking into America's electric grid and shutting down power stations, etc. Now, it's called warfare. Obviously, it involves the potential of hacking military targets, military systems. But there's also a civilian side of that. We'll get into the military a bit more later. But after all, during a war, an enemy will attack industrial plants, they'll attack dams, they'll attack power plants, all kinds of infrastructure. And so this kind of civilian non-military infrastructure is definitely a target. And it's definitely a target of cyber warfare. We saw this with the famous Stuxnet virus. And this essentially somebody, maybe Mossad or the American intelligence agencies, got a virus into Iran's centrifuges that they were using to enrich uranium, you know, purely for peaceful purposes, of course. I jest. They got it, but they hacked this virus into Iran's centrifuges. It got them to spin too fast so that they ultimately broke. It did more than just kind of temporarily disable Iran's systems. It actually broke the machines that they were using. So there's a lot of power in that. And could something like that happen to America? Well, this week, the Associated Press published an in-depth study just on the electric grid's vulnerability to cyber attack. So it's a very narrow focus, really, on one aspect of this. And here's an excerpt from a video that AP put out on this subject.
An Associated Press investigation found that the networks running the U.S. power grid remain vulnerable, despite repeated warnings by cybersecurity experts and increased efforts to stop the attacks.
We're still in this era where everyone believes it's secure by default, and it's not.
AP has learned that nearly a dozen times in the past decade, foreign hackers have gained remote access to networks that run the grid, which supplies power to the military, mass transit, businesses, and millions of Americans. While none of the intrusions resulted in the catastrophic blackouts lasting days or even weeks, feared by the intelligence community, that possibility remains.
It's all real. It's all, there's lots of variables, lots of potentials that could happen.
It's all real. We all tend to think that it's safe, said one of those experts that they interviewed. And it's not. The report that they produced was a lot longer than that short video, and that was just an excerpt from the video anyway, but it was a lot longer than the video that they put up. And in their report, here's just a few quotes. They wrote, "The public almost never learns the details about these type of attacks. And they're rarer, but also more intricate and potentially dangerous than data theft. And they also note that many of these attacks are never even reported to the government." So we can easily, I mean, I don't know about you, but cyber attacks is not something that usually enters into my day-to-day thinking. It's something that we often forget about. We do see them in the news, I guess, every now and again, but it's definitely not a daily occurrence. But there's a lot going on that we just don't see. And this article goes on to talk about, as you heard on that clip, that they've not yet caused these big blackouts that are feared by the intelligence community. But they write, "But so many attackers have stowed away in the largely investor-owned systems that run the U.S. electrical grid that experts say they likely have the capability to strike at will." So according to the Associated Press, experts in cybersecurity and in our computer systems believe that foreign countries and foreign powers have the ability to shut down America's electricity systems anytime they want. Not that they could hack in and potentially do this in a time of war, that they might have this capability should things start to go wrong, but that they have this already, that they've got everything already and set up and in place, and they can take down the American power grid at will. That's what these experts are saying. And they go through and they cite examples where they have hackers that they thought were from Russia were successfully getting malware, software that will spy on these electricity companies into their systems. And they write that these hackers have gained access to an aging, outdated power system. Many of the substations and equipment that move power across the U.S. are decrepit and were never built with network security in mind. Hooking the plants up to the internet over the last decade has given hackers new back doors. Distant wind farms, home solar panels, smart meters, and other network devices must be remotely monitored and controlled, which opens up the broader system to fresh points of attacks. Hundreds of contractors sell software and equipment to energy companies, and attackers have successfully used those outside companies as a way to get inside networks tied to the grid. So there's a huge potential for danger here. And the article goes on to talk about how generally it's very hard to find out who's behind an attack, if the attack is detected at all. And as they say, they're pretty sure they've linked some of the attacks to Russia, to the Chinese government, to Iran. They even think they've linked some of these attacks to the Islamic State. And AP in the report, they talked about how they went through a whole load of different examples of attacks that had gone on. And one of the worst that they brought out was from an energy company called Calpine. And this is a company that manages energy infrastructure and power networks across the country and power stations and things. And there was a hack launched on Calpine that they believe came from Iran. And in this attack, they got usernames and passwords to connect remotely to their network. Now, some of that information was outdated, but their experts, AP's experts, say that it would still be enough for them to shut down generating stations and to mess up communications between all the different parts of Calpine's electrical infrastructure. And they said that it may be enough to cause some blackouts. They got detailed engineering drawings of all of their networks and of their networks and of 71 power stations. And then that gives them a wealth of technical info that tells them which devices would need to be hacked to gain control of their network and to damage that network. And then they also got vital information on how the different parts of the network and the power stations talk to each other, which would allow them to cover up an attack or any other future incursion. And as I said, they think this came from Iran. And they wrote that the same hackers also got information from Pakistan International Airlines, the Mexico oil company Pemex, the Israel Institute of Technology, and the Navy Marine Corps Intranet. And this was just one of the most worrying examples of many. And here's another clip now from this same small, short video AP put out to go with their report, talking about another very worrying aspect of this story.
Security experts say the country's power system is aging and outdated, never built with network security in mind, and fixes often take way too long.
In the case of a large cyber attack on the U.S., we can't be calling up vendors and having them say, sorry, it's going to take us 8 months to get this patched.
But experts believe hackers may have already infiltrated networks that control parts of the grid, even if they have not yet used that access to turn off the lights.
So a review of some of what we've talked about there, but also just with a lot of these old systems, they could be taken out by a cyber attack, and it wouldn't be a case of hours getting them back online. It could be days, weeks, or even in that clip, they were talking about potentially months. So there is a lot more danger here than we typically think about. And here we're just talking about one fairly narrow target, the U.S. power grid. So this isn't talking too much about individual power stations. It's just looking at this one part of this network. And of course, there's a whole... And when you're talking about civilian infrastructure that is vulnerable to cyber attacks, there's a whole load of other potential targets that we could be talking about. We're talking about a pretty narrow range of targets. There's communications networks that are very important. In times of war and conflict, manufacturing plants become targets. Transportation networks and everything that goes into all the different transportation grids, trains, planes, roads, etc., traffic lights even. And you may be thinking, well, if this is so dangerous as AP is making out in the report, well, why don't we hear more of this? Well, there are some of these attacks going on all the time, and there is kind of a low level of reporting of these attacks coming on all the time. Just to give one example of a different kind of attack, the email system of the Joint Chief of Staffs was hacked over the summer. And this is a slightly different issue. That's cyber espionage. That's more about spying than necessarily cyber warfare. That would be a bit more about destruction. But my colleague Jeremiah Jacques had some great material earlier in the year about the Chinese hacking U.S. government systems and getting all kinds of private information about just about every person that works for the U.S. government, and information that will be vital to finding people that they could bribe or blackmail into spying for them. But then at the time that all of this was coming out, the Washington Post had an editorial that did a good job of addressing this idea of, well, if it's so dangerous, why don't we hear more about it? And they wrote, Unfortunately, many accounts of cyber attacks these days seem to produce yawns. And it goes through a whole litany of examples of cyber attacks, and it wrote, yet the United States has been complacent and lazy in responding. And they wrote, doing nothing is not an exceptional option, but that is what the US is doing. And part of the problem here is that all this reports of us being vulnerable to cyber attack is not strictly speaking news in a way. You know, news is about stuff that is new. When we're looking for what to include in our news reports at the top of the hour, we're looking at, well, what has changed since yesterday? What are the big stories that have come out over the last 24 hours? But this huge vulnerability to cyber attack isn't new. You know, if we were to produce regular updates on it, it would be, you know, today America is still incredibly vulnerable to cyber attack. And because there's nothing new, there's no new developments, it doesn't really get talked about. And it's really to AP's credit that they went out and did this digging in their latest report. And that's because organizations like AP do have an ongoing effort to try and bring up these important stories that don't necessarily make its way into the news cycle to our attention. Now, we'll have a short break. Now, once we're back, we're going to talk about something that's perhaps even more disturbing, the US military's vulnerability to cyber warfare. And we have some more shocking examples of what's going on here with one of America's most important weapon systems being critically, critically vulnerable. So keep listening for that and stay tuned on KPCG 101.3 or on kpcg.fm.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The very best minds in the world are in total ignorance of the unprecedented cataclysm that is about to strike. And why have these prophecies not been understood or believed? Because the vital key that unlocks prophecy to our understanding had been lost. That key is the identity of the United States and the British peoples in biblical prophecy. That key has been found. It is presented to those whose unprejudiced eyes are willing to see in this volume, the United States and Britain in prophecy. The events prophesied to strike the American and British peoples in the next few years are sure. These colossal world events, shrinking the first two world wars into insignificance, will come, but not until the warning has been made available for those whose eyes are willing to see. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily here at KPCG at 101.3 FM. If you're listening in the Edmond, Oklahoma region, online at kpcg.fm or via the TuneIn app and all kinds of other high-techy thingies. And high-techy thingies is what we're talking about today. More specifically, cyber warfare. Before the break, we talked a bit about hackers being caught targeting U.S. civilian infrastructures and a really dramatic report by the Associated Press on the vulnerability of the U.S. power grid. But now I'd like to move on to talking about the military's vulnerability. And is the American military really taking the threat of cyber attacks and cyber warfare seriously? How vulnerable is the military to these kind of attacks? Well, the big thing that I'd like to talk about on here is the most expensive weapon system in all of history, is what it's been called, the brand new F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. And this is a very important, there have been some very big news relating to this and cybersecurity. But before we get into that, let's just talk a bit about the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, the Lightning II. because just to establish how important this is to America's military. So this plane is designed to be the workhorse plane for the U.S. They've spent well over $1 trillion on this. I think it's starting to come up now to $1.5 trillion. Like I said, it's by a lot of measures, it is the most expensive weapons system in all of history. America plans on buying around 2,500 of these warplanes in the different variants. And just by way of comparison, the F-22 Raptor, which is another very modern and very cool airplane, that the U.S. brought fewer than 200. The F-35, 2,500. And actually, the U.S. will be owning and operating more of these than any other manned aircraft. And in fact, it may even make up the bulk of America's manned aircraft fleet once it's fully come online. At the moment, America's only using around 100 of them. They're still being produced and developed. But there are big, big plans for this plane. Now, it was developed with several other countries, including the UK. And this is the bit where I get to insert some national pride, because we invented the vertical landing and takeoff technology. The first vertical takeoff and landing plane was a British plane, the Harrier jump jet. And this is where the plane just kind of hovers up like a helicopter so it can take off without a runway. Or in the case of other variants like the F-35 can take off using this technology, just using a very, very short runway. And that's been incorporated into some models of the F-35, so it will be a very flexible plane, easy to operate from ships and aircraft carriers. It's also a stealthy aeroplane. This is becoming more and more important. As you hear pop up at the news at the top of the hour every now and again, very high-quality Russian air defense systems are becoming more and more common around the world. And the hope is that the F-35 will be able to get around these kind of systems and be undetected by these missile defense systems. So, for example, if Iran does finally get delivery of that S-300 missile defense system that Russia's been talking about selling them for a long time, and if America decides to bomb Iran, not something that is likely, but if they did, it would be the F-35 that more likely than not they would be using. Perhaps as they're still building the capability here, it might actually be the F-22, but that's the job the F-35 is designed to do, to go into these areas that are protected by good quality missile defense and take out ground targets. It's a multi-role fighter, so it's designed to take on other fighters and also be able to take out targets on the ground. Now, there are a lot of big problems with this aeroplane. There are some major, major criticisms of it, and that may be a subject for another article or another program. I think there's certainly something in just the weaknesses, or an article in the weaknesses of the American Defense Procurement Program. It wastes vast, vast amounts of money, and there are some really incredible examples of waste by the U.S. military. But as I said, that's really another subject. The point I want to establish now and here is just that this F-35, this aeroplane, is of huge importance to the United States. This is one of the most important weapons the U.S. has. As I said, it's one of the most important, expensive weapon systems ever developed. And it's going to be the plane, more than any other, that the U.S. Air Force is relying on. So this is vital for the U.S. military. It's vital for the Air Force. Air Force is vital for the military. It's vital for American power going forward. You know, the U.S. Air Force has bet their future on this plane. Now, this F-35 is a hugely high-tech affair. It's been called a flying supercomputer. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it is very, very dependent on its computer. The software that runs it is far more complicated than any NATO fighter jet ever built. And it's software controlled. The software runs the plane. And so, for example, there have been reports on things like the software to fire the plane's main cannon has not finished being developed. So the cannon is physically there. Everything about it works. But the F-35, according to some reports earlier this year, can't fire it because it doesn't have the software yet. So that shows you just how central the software and the computer is to everything it does. There's nothing or very little on here that's mechanical, that where you pull a lever, the lever pushes something, and it's all done by computer. So this computer is critical. Now, in November, reports starting emerging that the U.S. had cancelled, or at the very least delayed, its cybersecurity tests for the F-35. And these were the tests to determine how secure this all-important computer is for the F-35. Could it be hacked? How vulnerable is it to being brought down by the enemy? Is it possible to remotely compromise it? These kind of questions. And that test was cancelled. Now, why were these tests cancelled? It wasn't because they were deemed too expensive. It wasn't because the U.S. military decided, oh, it's probably fine, we don't really need to worry. It wasn't out of complacency directly. All of these would have been very bad and very worrying, but the real reason that they cancelled the test is more disturbing than all of that. They cancelled it because they were worried that just running these tests could ground all of the 100-odd F-35s America is already using. So they cancelled the test because they were concerned that America's mainstay of its future Air Force was so vulnerable to hacking that just doing some tests could ground the entire fleet. They were worried about accidentally grounding the entire fleet with just some cyber tests. Now, the software that they were due to test is its maintenance software. It's meant to be very smart. It's got software on there to tell when a part is faulty, to keep track of how long a parts have been in use and when they're due to be replaced, if parts are showing signs that they need to be replaced. And then it will automatically, it's a whole integrated system, so in theory it will automatically then order the spare part and tell the engineers where this spare part needs to go and where the replacement part needs to go. And it would get the whole logistics system going, tell the maintenance crew what to do. And so when I heard that the tests were on this system, my initial response was, okay, well, that doesn't sound quite as bad. You know, at least it wasn't necessarily the software that flies the plane that they decided to cancel the tests on. But here's what some defense analysts wrote in the War of Boring website. All this is tightly integrated with the ALICE program, that's the name for this logistics program, which many consider to be the plane's largest vulnerability. Should an enemy hack the ALICE system successfully, they could disable F-35 systems in combat, cause disastrous crashes, or ground the entire fleet. So again, this is the plane designed to make up the bulk of America's manned air power in the coming year. One of their most important weapons. It's vital to the future of America's military. And yet it's so vulnerable that every single one could potentially be grounded by a foreign power hacking into this system. And that system is so vulnerable that the US is scared to even test it, because they're worried that they could accidentally break all of their aeroplanes. And it gets worse. Here's more from this War of Boring article. It's not as if this is a theoretical threat. The Department of Defense admitted in 2013 that a foreign power had hacked into unclassified F-35 subcontractor systems and stolen large amounts of sensitive information about the aircraft. The Pentagon would not say which foreign power stole the data at the time, but earlier this year, documents released by Edward Snowden confirmed the Chinese stole the information from Lockheed Martin in 2007. So they've already got much of the data that they would need a foreign power has to start designing ways to hack this system, to ground these aircraft remotely. So this problem with this one airplane, because America relies on it so much, is a huge problem. But it goes far beyond that. You know, the fact that this vulnerability even exists says a lot about the American military's attitude towards cyber warfare. It shows that there's not really been a real effort, certainly nothing close to the effort necessary, to start addressing this major, major weakness. You know, this has been known, this weakness has been known about for years, if not decades. And yet, America's most modern fighter plane has this huge vulnerability. Now, another major problem that exposes this lax attitude to cyber warfare that's been going on for years comes from the difficulty that America has with counterfeit parts. And the problem here, and it's a problem for more than just the military, but especially, it's especially dramatic within the military, is that a lot of companies, especially Chinese, there's a lot of companies in China and elsewhere that will produce, you could call counterfeit computer parts, but computer parts that are basically corrupted, that don't act as they suppose. And there's all kinds of different ways that these could be used. But the US military is not at all picky about who it buys computer parts from. It's pretty easy for anyone to start up a business and buy computers online and then sell them on to the US military. And people have been talking about this problem since the mid-1990s. But only now are they starting to address it. And even so, it's in the very early stages of doing that. I mean, we've been writing on this story on our website since 2008, and it's barely changed. And just to give an example of what this could mean, in 2011, the US nearly installed faulty transistors in a device that was about to be installed on a US helicopter. And had these been fitted, the helicopter would not have been able to fire its weapon. And they traced these transistors, these faulty transistors, back to five different companies, again, just to show that they're not picky about where these chips and these microchips come from. They're not coming direct from a manufacturer. They're often through a very opaque system from one company to another company to another company. Anyway, the US military traced these back through five different companies to China. And in this case, they decided that these transistors were genuinely faulty. It was a mistake rather than a malicious attempt to damage a US helicopter. But it shows the potential of these attacks. And here's what Popular Science wrote about this story earlier this year. They wrote, "Microchips are the bedrock upon which our digital world is based, and they are almost entirely unsecured. Whereas software security is on pace to become a $156 billion industry in the next 5 years, hardware security gets relatively little mention. Yet the challenges hardware presents are in many ways more extensive, more dangerous, and more difficult to combat." And it goes on to talk about some specific a specific attack, and it concludes, "This kind of attack could have hit anywhere hardware exists, from coffee makers to fighter jets." And this article goes on to talk about how a hacker could build a kill switch into a chip. And so they write, "Doing this is easier than one might think." And they go through and give an example of how you could design a faulty chip that shuts down the whole device that it's installed on. And then they go on to write, "More than three quarters of the field programmable gate arrays in the F-35 strike fighter," that's the same plane we've been talking about, "are made in China and Taiwan. So are the majority of chips in automobiles and wireless medical devices such as pacemakers and dialysis machines. If that hardware was modified ever so slightly, a kill code could successfully disable the chip and the systems that depend on it. And that code could come from a number of sources. A command could originate in a text or email message. It could be delivered by radio signal to a micro antenna hidden in the chip. It could even be a simple time bomb programmed at the chip's inception to trigger a coordinated shutdown at a certain time and date." Now, as I said, this is a problem that has been talked about since the mid-90s, if not before. And part of the reason they've not been addressed, I think, is a dangerous complacency. But another part is it is incredibly hard to fix this problem. This same article wrote, "The potential avenues of attacks are so numerous and insidious that they can be hard to contemplate." And then they had some quotes from a retired U.S. Army general, Air Force general, a four-star general, General Michael Hayden. So he headed both the CIA and NSA, and he was asked at a discussion about this problem, hardware hacking, and he said, and I quote, "It's the problem from hell." And he said, "Frankly, it's not a problem that can be solved. This is a condition that you have to manage." So, as I mentioned earlier, the U.S. has some programs in their infancy to try and stop this problem. But when you're building planes with, you know, all but supercomputers and all kinds with thousands and thousands of transistors, if not millions, on each one, how do you inspect every single one? How do you keep that secure? As the general said, it's not a problem that can be solved. There is no good solution. And this is a problem that applies to a whole lot of this issue of cyber warfare. The Washington Post wrote in that same article I quoted from earlier that cyber conflict does not fit neatly into other types of war, espionage, and crime. It is asymmetrical, favoring a smaller, stealthy attacker over the defender. The concept of deterrence from the nuclear age, the idea of two cocked pistols preventing either side from shooting, offers limited comfort in a conflict in which attackers often can avoid identification until long after an attack. So it's a hard problem to solve. America, with its cyber command, does seem to be able to carry out some cyber attacks, and the Stuxnet virus may be evidence of that. But it's much easier to launch an attack than it is to defend against one. To launch an attack, you just need to compromise one system. To defend, you have to stop your enemy from compromising thousands upon thousands of different systems. It favors the attacker. It favors a quick surprise attack. Now, when I was looking at some of the material that I put together for the Trumpet Daily radio show that I did on the militarization of space, which I wrote up for the print edition of the Trumpet, I think that's now in the January-February. Might be the March edition. I think it's the March edition. Yes, in the March edition of the Trumpet. When I was writing that up, I took a look at a book by P.W. Singer and August Cole. It's a fiction book, and I'm definitely not necessarily recommending it here. There are bits in there that are very inappropriate. But these are both authors that are usually military analysts. P.W. Singer is an academic. He's currently a strategist for the New America Foundation. August Cole is a fellow at the Atlantic Council. I don't have it in my notes here, but from memory, I think Cole was before then a defense correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. So they're both serious military thinkers, and they're both more typically found writing papers on defense than novels. So they wrote this heavily footnoted novel, and just at Wired, when they interviewed one of the reporters, they wrote that this book, Ghost Fleet, also comes with hundreds of footnotes explaining how every single military technology, sci-fi weapon, and geopolitical trend mentioned in the book is grounded in reality. That's why, rather than simply a good read, Ghost Fleet can come across as a 400-page warning. And that's what it is in a lot of respects. And so in this book, they imagine a war against China. I think it was in about 20 years. I can't remember if they put an exact date on it. But these are two very smart people with a great knowledge of where modern warfare is going, with technologies being developed, with the different strategies that military thinkers are thinking with along the lines of. And they put together this book. And in this book, right at the start, China launches a surprise attack on the U.S. The very first shot of this war is against an American satellite. And that's what we talked about a few weeks ago in the militarization of space. And so right at the start, they take out all of America's key space-based infrastructure. See, I've practiced saying it since I did that program a few weeks ago. And at the same time, they launch a massive cyber attack. And so right at the start, the U.S. is completely blind. They don't know what's going on. Their ships are all pretty much stationary. All of their computer systems are offline. Then China's carrier-killing missiles, something that they're developing right now, just about take out America's Pacific fleet. And as this combined Russian-Chinese cyber attack rolls out using things like troop carriers disguised as container ships, and that's something that Russia is already working on, they come up against this F-35 plane that we've been talking about, this mainstay, this planned mainstay of U.S. defense. And in these authors' imaginations, counterfeit chips inside the F-35 are programmed to release a homing signal at exactly the right time, or when they receive a signal, basically. They emit this homing signal that Chinese missiles can home in on. And so these stealthy planes are all very easily destroyed. Now, as I said, this is a fictional scenario, but a very plausible one. And by the time the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff know what's going on, they've already lost. The Pacific Fleet is gone. Hawaii's been taken. And so America decides not to launch nuclear weapons, partly because they don't want to start a nuclear war over a revenge attack, and partly because they're not even sure if the missiles will fire or whether they too have been hacked and disabled by the Chinese. As I said, that's a plausible scenario come up with by some top military figures painting a picture of how a future war could go. And it matches exactly what Mr. Flurry talked about in that article, America's Achilles Heel, that we mentioned at the start of this program. And in that article, Mr. Flurry quotes a defense analyst, Joseph DeCourcy, writing, "Computer dependence is the Western world's Achilles heel, and within a few years, this weakness could be tested to the full." And in this article, he writes, "I believe one key end-time Bible prophecy could well be fulfilled through this kind of the kind of cyber terrorism Mr. DeCourcy describes." Then he quotes Ezekiel 77, verse 14, which says, "They have blown the trumpet, even all to make ready, but none goes forth to the battle." And then he goes on to write, "The trumpet of war is to be blown in Israel, mainly Britain and America. And it seems that everybody is expecting our people to go to battle. But the greatest tragedy imaginable occurs. Nobody goes to the battle, even though the trumpet is blown. Will it be because of computer terrorism?" Well, that's exactly what these two military thinkers described in their book. America doesn't go to the battle, at least initially, because of the loss of satellites combined with this computer terrorism, mean that they don't even know that they're being attacked until the attack is already over. And in this article, Mr. Flurry warns of the danger of a cyber attack. And this gets to the heart of one of the key problems here with this issue of cyber warfare, and that is complacency. That's at the heart of why this problem hasn't really been addressed. And at the heart of this is the fact that America's leaders and citizens simply don't believe they will have to fight another war with another major power. All of America's military thinking just about is in terms of maybe fighting Iran as a potential enemy, or bombing Syria, or chasing terrorists in the desert. The number one focus in the minds of people designing America's next generation of fighters and thinking about these problems is that it's not thinking in terms of fighting nations like Russia or China or a European power. And so if you only expect to be fighting third world countries, well, cybersecurity is not a big deal. And, you know, if you think that it's absolutely impossible that the US would ever have a war with China, then what does it matter if China has hacked the American electricity network and could shut it down at will, like we talked about at the start of this program? If you believe we're never ever going to have to fight China, then that doesn't matter. They would never use it. That would be an act of war, shutting it down. And so that's the dangerous complacency at the heart of America's weakness here. The entire defense arrangement, so much of it just revolves around this idea of fighting terrorists in the desert and not fighting peers. And just too many have adopted this very comforting worldview, this kind of end of history view, where the type of conflicts that have been commonplace for thousands of years are now relegated to the past. But that's dangerous, and it's complacent. And it's this complacency that means that even though people have been talking about cyber warfare, and really it's so easy now just to tune out when we hear the subject because it's been America's vulnerability has been discussed here for so long, it's very easy just to be like, oh, yeah, well, I know all about that. That it's because of that complacency that that is there. Now, you can learn more about this subject by going on our website and reading Mr. Flurry's article. And actually, he wrote an expanded version of that article some years later called America's Achilles Heel and Germany, that contains the same material as that article, mostly from the mid-90s. I mean, from about, I think, 1998, the first article was written. This one is from 2005, and it's updated a bit more, has a bit more material. So you can go to thetrumpet.com, type America's Achilles Heel and Germany into the search bar. You should be able to find it. I'm drawing down. That's about it. For me, we do have some exciting new presenters coming up over the next few weeks. Your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, should be back for a few days next week, but we've also got some new, brand new guest hosts coming up, including Robert Morley, Brent Noctegal, Jeremiah Jacques, and Philip Nice. So I'm sure we can look forward to some fascinating programs over the next few weeks. Right now, I'll be sticking around in the studio here at Edstone to chat to Trumpet Managing Editor Joel Hilliker as he puts together the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. That's our panel discussion where we review the week's news, and that will air later today at 4 p.m. in Oklahoma. As usual, you can catch up on any of our programs or listen live at kpcg.fm or on 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma. Thanks for listening, and tune in again on Monday to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.